Can you do us all a favor? Get this set. She awakens in the middle of the night, frantically looking for a pen and paper to write this down. She doesn't want to forget a single detail of this new idea she's just had for that special day. She's been capturing these ideas for a while now, painting the scene in her mind. And as the day draws nearer, she thinks more and more about each perfect little detail. The location, the colors, the flowers and decor, the music, that first dance, the brilliant white dress and the sparkle in his eyes. She's thought about it all, and now that she's had years to prepare the perfect scene in her mind's eye, the wedding planning is all but perfected. She's 13. While this may not be every young lady's experience, it's often said that a woman begins to dream of her wedding day from the time she's just a little girl. She may try on her mother's dress, like our girls have done in the past, which is pretty hilarious, or use her own costume to rehearse the day, maybe forcing her younger sister or a handsome stuffed animal to stand in as the groom. For guys, the thought may not have even crossed our mind at a similar age. When it finally does, the only details we probably ponder are open bar or cash. And your dad is paying for the wedding, right? And how long do we have to stay at the reception? Okay, maybe there's a little more thought than that. Sometimes. From the time you're young, you can dream about and even plan for the details of a perfect wedding. But how much time and preparation and planning have you put into your future marriage? I want to give the title today. I don't always give a title for my messages, but I want to go ahead and give you the title for the sermon today, which is Strengthening Your Marriage as a Teen. Notice the careful wording. I didn't say strengthening your teen marriage, but strengthening your marriage as a teen. There may have just been a collective slouch of an average of 3 inches in the room from anyone under the age of 20 or so, and they heard the topic. Or you may have scooted away from a friend of the opposite sex by about 2 inches. If you scooted closer, please just try to focus with me today. Just hone it in right here. Why cover this topic? Well, because strengthening your marriage starts long before the wedding day. It starts long before the honeymoon or your first big fight. In fact, the strength of any marriage begins to be determined long before you and your spouse ever even meet in many circumstances. The decisions you make now in your teen and young adult years will have a direct impact on the strength of your marriage in the future, whether you realize it or not. Why cover this topic? Because I want you to have a strong, fulfilling marriage. I want the church to be filled with strong, healthy couples. There's no need to slouch down in your chair or be concerned if you're a young person today, because I'm giving this message because I'm on your side, and I want what's best for you, and I want to see you thrive in your relationship in the future. I want you to have a strong, fulfilling relationship with your future spouse, just as God designed. And I'm confident that your parents do too. We may not always be good at communicating that in the most positive way possible, so I hope today will be different. Now, sometimes people say to me, and I know we as adults, we do this all the time around younger people in the church too, you might hear something like, I hear often because I have 4 daughters, "Whew, you're going to have to get your shotgun ready. Lock them up till they're 35, things like that. We joke about those things as dads, but really what I want is husbands for my daughters. I just want them to be good husbands that'll treat them better than they treat themselves. Good husbands who rely on God to provide the love my daughters need through them, to be conduits of God's love." Other parents would likely say the same about their sons. I can't speak to it from that perspective because the Smith Factory makes girls only. So. Actually, while preparing this sermon, I prepared a document that I titled Husbands for My Daughters. And I just gave it some thought for 20 or 30 minutes. What do I want in a husband for my girls? Someday I'll share that with them. In a few years, when they reach the teenage years, I'll probably make copies for all the gentlemen here. Basically, it'll be like, if you don't meet the prerequisites, don't even try. So, as parents, we're not against you as teenagers. We're not against you being interested in someone of the opposite sex. Actually, in the long run, that's what we want, is for you to find someone in the church who shares your beliefs and your dreams and ambitions, who you can spend your life with. But what can we do now to strengthen that marriage in the future, before you ever even meet that person, in many cases? We're not trying to keep you from finding someone to love and spend your life with. We want those things for you. We just want to see you do it at a time and in a way and with the person that will lead to the strongest, most successful marriage possible. So what can you do now to strengthen your future marriage? And this is not just a message for teens. If we look closely, husbands and wives, many of these principles that we'll cover today still apply to us as well and can still be put into action, regardless of where we are in our journey. If your married years have passed, or they never came, this message is still for you, because you have young people in your congregations to mentor and coach and encourage and share your experiences with. Whether that's experience as a married person or experience as a person who would have liked to have been married but has remained single out of faithfulness to God, because of standards you set for yourself that you're not willing to compromise on. So this message isn't just for the young among us. What can you do to strengthen your future marriage? I have 4 points I want to go over today. We'll see how many we get through. Hopefully 4. Point number 1. Find the one ASAP. Find the one ASAP. Now, you'll hear a lot in the world about finding the one, meaning that one person, that soulmate, the one and only person you were meant to be with, who can provide you with the satisfaction and the fulfillment that nobody else can. Well, if you're going to start strengthening your marriage now, you need to find the one. ASAP! Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Some of the dads are clenching their fists right now. Get that guy off the stage. Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6, we're going to read verses 4 and 5. It's what's often referred to as the Shema, or the Shema. Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your hearts, with all your soul, and with all your strength. This passage is often used to emphasize a monotheistic belief, a belief in only one God. Or it can be used at times to point out the unity between God the Father and the Son. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. They are united in purpose. They are a family. Well, this word translated one can also be translated first. It's interesting to read these two verses, verses 4 and 5, together with that translation in mind. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is first. He is the one. The one and only being who can truly give you satisfaction and fulfillment that's lasting. And that flows right into verse 5. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. God wants to be first in our lives. He wants to be the one. And the biggest, most impactful thing we can do to strengthen our marriage is, whether you're still young or you're not quite as young as you used to be, is find the one ASAP and keep him as number one. That's going to have more impact on the strength of your marriage than any other single thing you can do. If you consider the first of the Ten Commandments, I know we cover these locally in Pittsburgh and Wheeling, but You get the redundant version sometimes because of the other guests we have here. The first of the Ten Commandments. God tells us He wants to be first. He wants to be our top priority. You shall have no other gods before Me. God wants to be first, but there are plenty of other things we can put in front of Him as priorities in our lives, including other people. We can actually make a god of a spouse. We can make a god of a romantic interest. We can make a god or an idol of this perfect wedding day that we have in mind. Let's go back to Luke 14, verse 26. Luke chapter 14, verse 26. Jesus Christ tells us something important here about our priorities when it comes to our relationships. He tells us something about the one and who the one should be. Luke 14, verse 26, the beginning of this passage about counting the cost before we commit our lives to God. Verse 26 of Luke 14 says, "If anyone comes to Me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be My disciple." Now, it's not describing here that God wants us to be rude and hateful to other people. That God wants us to just treat others poorly and only treat Him well. If anyone comes to Me and does not hate his father and mother, some might say, okay, I got that one down. Pretty easy. Hopefully not. But your own wife and your own children? The word translated hate here means to love less by comparison. What God requires of us is that we love anyone else in our lives, any other physical human being, less than Him. That He's the top priority. He's the one. All other relationships have to be secondary to our relationship with God if we want to be true followers of Christ, disciples of His. But the amazing thing is, when we make God the one in our lives, first above all others, it amplifies our ability to love others better than we could do otherwise. Putting God first, keeping Him first, making Him the one, increases our ability to actually love others well. Finding the one ASAP is the most important thing we can do to strengthen our marriages in the future. You can love your future husband or wife better and have a stronger, more fulfilling marriage with that person if you don't try to put your spouse in the position of number one. Because it's just not fair to do that. See, the problem is if we put our spouse in the position of number one, the one and only person who can fulfill us and satisfy us and bring us happiness, we're setting them up for failure. Because it's impossible for one other human being to provide us with everything we need, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Only God the Father can do that through the power of His Spirit. If we put someone else in that position, we have some idealistic distortion going on, an improper perspective on what another human being can do. If we truly love our spouse, whether we know who that person is, we've already made that commitment or not, we won't try to put them in God's position of being first in our lives. We'll keep Him as the one so that we can love our spouse better. He's the source of satisfaction and purpose that's lasting. He's the only being who can know and fulfill the desires of our heart. Often we want our spouse to read our mind and know what we need. God can. Another physical human being can't. So God must be first, before spouse. Let's go to Matthew chapter 19. Matthew 19, beginning in verse 1. I'm going to move quickly and start reading a little quicker today because I want to try to get through the entirety of this message. We'll see if it happens or not. We'll do a little time check as we go through. Matthew 19, verse 1. "Now it came to pass, when Jesus had finished these sayings, that He departed from Galilee and came to the region of Judea beyond the Jordan. And great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" So they bring up this challenging question that they had various opinions on. This question of, is it okay to just get divorced for just any reason, just because you feel like it? Verse 4. And he answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.' So then, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate." We're not going to read the rest of the account, because my purpose isn't to talk about divorce and remarriage. You can read through there that Jesus Christ does tell us there is a situation where although it was not God's design from the beginning, where divorce is sometimes an allowable action, not a command, but an allowable action. But referring to the account in Genesis here, the marriage of the first man and the first woman, we're given an important detail by Jesus Christ himself, the God who would have been interacting with that first man and first woman. It says in verse 6, "They're no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate." See, we're told here, marriage is not just a legal agreement in a civil society. For those who are in a relationship with God and seeking his blessing, at marriage, he joins the two together. He binds them together in a way that cannot be separated, and he creates a new, unique family unit. God is the creator of marriage. He's the one who can bind a new couple together as husband and wife, and he has the power to bless and strengthen that relationship. Now, marriage is a covenant, a contract in which each party promises to uphold certain conditions, fill certain responsibilities, and in return they can expect the other parties to do the same. That's what a covenant is, an agreement or a contract. Well, the covenant we make at marriage is not just a covenant with our spouse. There's a third party involved. It's God who joins two together into one flesh. In our church wedding ceremony, we ask both husband and wife to agree to certain terms and responsibilities. Whether that's by repeating after the minister or listening to what's required of them and simply saying, "I do." And those responsibilities, those promises that they're making, begin with the words, "Do you then, Zachary," just use myself as an example, "do you then, Zachary, faithfully promise and covenant with God to take Emily Beth Troyer to be your lawful wedded wife?" And the vows continue. The promises, the responsibilities continue. See, we don't just make a covenant with our spouse when we're united together in marriage. We make a covenant with God because we understand that it's Him and Him alone that joins us and unites us as a new family unit. It's not just a piece of paper. It's not just a legal agreement. We make this covenant with God. As a husband, I agreed to certain responsibilities. My wife likewise agreed to certain responsibilities. And to the degree that we yield to our God-given responsibilities as husband and wife, rely on Him to help us to do that, to that degree is the degree to which He'll fulfill His part of the covenant and bless our marriage. See, it's a covenant with Him, which means He has certain terms that He agrees to also. If we fulfill our responsibilities, our part of the contract, He has promises that He'll fulfill on His end too, which include blessings at a spiritual level and on a spiritual plane that cannot be achieved without God at the core of a marriage. Now, people can have relatively happy marriages occasionally without necessarily having God at the core of their marriage. They can agree to their vows, and they can do a relatively good job of fulfilling them. But we cannot achieve what God designed marriage to be and to accomplish without God being the third party in the marriage covenant. The marriage cannot be elevated to the level that God wants it to be without realizing that we need Him to give us the strength to be good husbands and good wives. Without a personal relationship with God, without Him first being the one in that relationship, it simply can't reach the level He designed. If God's at the core of a marriage, it'll simply be stronger. If we recognize our need for Him to be an invested party in our relationship, He'll give us the ability to fill our roles and husbands and as husbands and wives at levels that we wouldn't be able to do it without His help. Now, married people in the room, you'll be able to understand this quote at a level that perhaps those not yet married can't quite comprehend. It's from a book titled Visionary Marriage by Rob and Amy Renau. I can't recommend the book because I haven't read it. But I read this quote in another book I was reading. They were quoting from these authors, so I thought I should give credit to the original authors rather than the book I was reading the quote from. See if you can relate. If you think you have it in you to be a godly husband, either you don't know what God desires, or you've set the bar way too low. If you think you have it in you to be a godly husband, either you don't know what God desires, or you've set the bar way too low. That is so true. And the author's point, at least the author of the book I was reading, a book titled A Lifelong Love by Gary Thomas, his point in that chapter is not that it's impossible to be a good husband. His point is, it's impossible to be a godly husband and live up to the standard God has for us by our own strength alone. We have to rely on and depend on God to actually be the kind of husband He wants us to be. And the same goes for a wife. It's only by strength that comes from Him that we can live up to the standard He has for us in marriage. If you want to have a strong marriage, you need help from the God who designed it. That's all there is to it. Now that brings us back to the teens among us. What can you do now to strengthen your marriage? Find the one. Find the one, ASAP. Build your relationship with God now. Learn to rely on Him now. Look to His Word for direction and guidance now. Put Him first in your life. And in so doing, you will be strengthening your future marriage. You may not have met the one that you'll marry yet, but you have access to a relationship with the one who holds the greatest key to success and satisfaction in your future marriage. You can start developing a relationship with that third party in the covenant, God. You can start working on that relationship now. And if you do, your marriage will reap the benefits later. So find the one ASAP. Point number two, be exclusive. Be exclusive. Now, today in our world, this is basically the nutshell version of how dating works. You like somebody. You want to get to know them. Therefore, you are an exclusive item. You're an exclusive couple in the minds of everyone else, perhaps before you even realize it. Or perhaps without you even being asked or agreeing to it. In everyone else's minds, you are a thing, and therefore everyone else should stay away. Can't talk to her. Can't try to get to know him. They're exclusive. Well, I think being in an exclusive relationship is good. And I'm not just talking about an exclusive relationship with God this time. Sorry, parents. Sorry if I'm making you nervous again. If you want to strengthen your marriage as a teenager, you need to be exclusive with your spouse. Be exclusive, but with your spouse. Show of hands, how many of you know who your future spouse will be? Teenage boys, I would advise you not to raise your hand right now. Some of you may think you have an idea. You may hope that you've met the person who will be your future husband or wife. If you want to strengthen your marriage as a teen, though, you need to be exclusive with your spouse. And most of you would probably readily admit that you don't know who that person is yet. Exactly. Be exclusive. One of the best things you can do right now as a teen to strengthen your marriage in the future is to make a conscious decision to be exclusive with your future spouse. Being exclusive today means having a relationship where you kind of cut others off. This person needs your time and attention, therefore I don't have time for this group of friends or these people anymore. It can almost be an unwritten rule that if a person is dating someone else, they're off limits. Don't talk to them, don't ask them to dance, whatever. Don't look at them with a smile. Some of those limitations of being in an exclusive relationship are simply not profitable. They just damage the other relationships and friendships you have and actually limit your ability to be fulfilled and satisfied with life, because one person cannot fulfill you completely and all your needs. But there are certain limitations or guidelines that are wise when you are in an exclusive, committed relationship. There are some things about being exclusive that are good. For example, as a married man, I'm not going to visit a lady alone in her home. It's a policy we have in the ministry. It makes it challenging at times because my wife and four little girls who are homeschooled can't always come along. And it gets a little awkward at times where I have to tell an 80 or 90-year-old woman, sorry, I can't come see you because, what, you think I'm going to be attracted to you, you 36-year-old weirdo? No, it's not that. It's not that. But because I'm a married man, there are certain standards I have that where I'm exclusive with my wife. Out of respect and honor for my wife, she's the only one I give exclusive private access to of the opposite sex. I still have friends of the opposite sex, but those relationships are typically mutual friendships that I share with my wife. I don't have a close, intimate relationship where I have these deep, personal, intimate conversations with a female friend who my wife doesn't know or isn't involved in those conversations. It's an exclusive part of my relationship with my wife only. There's a guardrail there. I'm not going to have an emotionally intimate, personal relationship with another woman, no more than I would engage in physical intimacy with anyone else. Because that emotional intimacy often builds that desire for the physical. The fact of the matter is, I'm not my own. I belong to my spouse. I'm exclusive with her. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 7. 1 Corinthians 7. We'll read just verses 3 and 4 to try to keep this with the least amount of awkwardness possible for the young people in the room. Verses number 3 and 4, 1 Corinthians 7. Verse 3, let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. I don't think there's a need for further explanation. I'll leave that up to you, parents, if there is. We're given an important principle here, though. You're not your own. I'm not my own. You belong to your spouse. And even the authority over your own body belongs to your spouse and should be used for the good of the other. Before you ever even meet that person, exclusive rights to your body belong to your spouse, and theirs likewise are reserved for you. Even if you don't know who that person is yet. Now, if this is true for the physical aspects of our relationship, how much more for your heart? If you are not your own, you belong to your spouse. There are certain things that are your spouse's exclusive right. How much more your heart? If the intimacy of affection is something that should be exclusively reserved for a spouse, how about the intimacy of our emotions? How much could the determination to be exclusive with your future spouse help protect your own heart as well as your body and preserve it in its most complete state so that you can give it as a gift to your future mate. Now, this is hard. This is challenging. Remember, I'm giving this message because I'm on your side. I want you to have a successful, happy marriage. If it seems impossible, it is. Alone. Which is why we need to find the one ASAP. Let's go to Proverbs 4, verse 23. Now, this perspective that I'm encouraging you to take on, this perspective of being exclusive with your spouse, even though you don't know who that person is yet. This is a perspective that can help to guide the decisions you make now while you're young, because the decisions you make now do directly relate to the strength of your marriage in the future. Those are decisions regarding what you do physically, but also what you do with your heart emotionally. Proverbs 4 and verse 23 gives us some instruction on the heart here. Proverbs 4, verse 23. Keep your hearts with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Other translations say, guard your heart with all diligence. And that's kind of the opposite of the modern approach of the day when it comes to dating and love and romance. There's no guarding of the heart. There's no preserving of it. It's just let it flow. See where it leads. Guard your heart. Keep it. Preserve it. Because it belongs to someone else. It's not just yours. Just as much as your body belongs to your future spouse, so your heart does too. Be exclusive with it. Save it for the person you want to give the complete version of it to. Don't just hand it out like it's cheap. And what does this mean? Plan an arranged marriage? The dads in the room are like, yeah, let's see, get those. Does it mean don't have feelings for anyone until you say I do? Of course not. I'll share a personal detail here for the young people. I was 17 when I met my wife and she was 16. And we were married when I was 20 and she was 19. Now the dads really want me to leave. And they don't stop. Does that mean we did everything perfectly? No. Do I regret meeting my wife at that time or getting married at the age we did? No, I don't. But are there certain things that would have been much easier? Some hurts, some struggles that maybe we wouldn't have had to go through if we had been a little more mature? Yeah. Were there difficult conversations about how well we guarded our hearts before meeting each other? Yeah. Remember, I want you to be in a strong, godly marriage with someone you love and cherish. I'm not telling you in this point to just don't have feelings for anybody of the opposite sex. That's not realistic. God gave you those feelings and desires for a reason. But what reason? To lead you to the point of marriage, right? That's not the purpose of dating for most people in the world today. Just to feel fulfilled and happy and valued, not necessarily to lead to a point of being lifelong committed spouses. So I want you to be exclusive with your spouse rather than jumping into the common pattern of just giving your heart to any person who you admire or you feel an attraction to. Because the cultural norm of our society today is be exclusive serially. Be exclusive over and over again. You like this person? Dive in wholeheartedly. Be an item. Have fun. Learn about that person. See if it might be a good match. If not, move on to being exclusive with someone else. Try again. Heart heals. But will that approach strengthen your future marriage? That common approach to dating is basically a practice of the cycle of divorce and remarriage. When you think about it. Be exclusive, be all in, invest completely with this person, put your heart on a platter. You may get hurt or you may do the hurting, but there's always someone else. Just rinse, recycle, and repeat. It's the practice of divorce and remarriage without the commitment part. I want to read a short quote from a Life, Hope, and Truth article on a different approach to dating. It says, dating should not be our starting point for every relationship. Instead, dating should be a phase of our relationship that we gradually and knowingly move into with forethought, wisdom, and discretion. I think that's really wise advice. You don't just jump into an exclusive relationship with someone just because you're attracted to them. It's a thoughtful decision you make to move your relationship to that point after some thorough consideration. My admonition for you today as young people who want to have strong marriages in the future is to break this cycle that's common in the world around you by taking on a mindset of being exclusive with your spouse. How would your approach to dating change if this was a fundamental guiding question? How will this make my spouse feel? How will this make my spouse feel? Will this honor my spouse one day? Or will it be something I have to apologize for? Will it strengthen my relationship with her or with him? Or will it just add to a list of awkward relationships we have with others now because, well, that's that guy you thought you were going to marry and you basically had your dress picked out with him and I know what you did with that girl. And does it have an effect on your marriage in the future? Absolutely. There's a recent podcast recorded by Jason Hyde, an elder in the Louisville, Kentucky congregation. Very well done. If you haven't heard it, I would recommend it. It's probably 5 or 6 weeks ago. You can find it on the Something to Think About tab of the teen website, teens.cogwa.org. Mr. Hyde gave a podcast titled An Intimate Question. And he was basically open about a very blunt question he was asked by a young person in his congregation, which was, how far is it okay to go with a girl? And Mr. Hyde does a good job being tactful about answering that question. But he gave some concepts to consider, concepts to guide us in terms of answering that question when it comes to the physical aspects of dating relationships. One of the things he mentioned along the way, which I thought was a really good principle too, he said, if there's a question about the appropriateness of a certain action, that's probably because it's not appropriate. But the two concepts he presented I thought were excellent as well. Concept number one, he said, assume the person you're currently attracted to will one day marry your best friend or sibling. Give that some thought. Assume the person you're currently attracted to will one day marry your best friend or sibling. Imagine how that would play out if that were the case. Would it create an awkwardness now around that person in the future? Or an animosity or a bitterness toward that other person who used to be interested in your spouse? If you use that as a guiding principle for your interactions with the people you're interested in, maybe that can strengthen your marriage. Now you can think about it from the opposite perspective, maybe time travel a little bit. Imagine you're married and you walk into a room and you see someone with your spouse doing fill in the blank. Whatever it is, you're wondering if it's acceptable in your dating relationship or not. If you saw someone doing that with your spouse, what would your reaction be? If it would be a punch in the jaw or anger, then you're the man. Like the prophet Nathan said to David, you're the man. If you're doing those things with someone else's future spouse, then that means when they find out about it later, they're going to have those feelings of animosity and bitterness and hatred toward you. And it's going to affect the strength of your marriage in the future. It's going to hurt. It's going to sting. You don't want to be that guy or that girl that somebody else's husband or wife has to be awkward around. Concept number two that Mr. Hyde presented was imagine your future spouse asking you about your past intimacy with others. He asked the listeners to imagine the scene that you've met a person you're very interested in. You think this is the person that you could marry one day. and they come to you and they say, I feel the same way, but before we can take our relationship to the next level of being an exclusive couple, I just have to ask you something first. How intimate have you been with others? Let that concept sink in. What do you want to be able to say to your future spouse? What do you want your future spouse to be able to say to you in that regard? While Mr. Hyde was talking about physical intimacy, I believe the same principles can be applied to emotional intimacy too. No spouse wants to hear about a list of other people that you dreamed of marrying, or that you shared your deepest, darkest secrets with, your hopes, your dreams, your ambitions. The physical intimacy is obvious in Scripture when it comes to standards God has for us leading up to marriage, what should be reserved for marriage. Although it doesn't give specifics, you're not going to find a chart in here about which physical acts are okay before marriage and which aren't. But what about emotional intimacy? Be exclusive with your spouse. Think about how you handle your heart and your body and how that's going to contribute to the strength of your marriage in the future. The truth is, the decisions you make now, even long before you ever meet your husband or wife, will affect the strength of your marriage. You're showing how much your spouse means to you today by how you preserve your heart, your mind, your body, your dreams, your plans exclusively for them. Now, will this approach of being exclusive prevent all heartbreak? No. And we're still human beings. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to think we're ready. We think we finally found the right person. And sometimes we're still going to be hurt. But will this approach strengthen your marriage one day? When your spouse finds out that you wanted to preserve your heart and affection for them alone as much as possible. Yep. It's going to make your marriage stronger. If you've already stumbled in these areas, whether it's physical intimacy or emotional intimacy, are you without hope? No, you can still strengthen your marriage by the decisions you make now. How much will it mean to your spouse in the future to hear that you recognized maybe you weren't taking the best approach? And because of your love for this person you hadn't even met yet, you decided to do things differently. Do you see how that can strengthen your marriage in the future, even if you have made mistakes in the past? Time check. Oh, buddy. Point number three. Find the one ASAP. Be exclusive. Point number three. Propose immediately. Hope you recognize a bit of satire. Propose immediately. So what we're going to do, I think we'll do it after the closing prayer, not in the middle of services, but we're going to ask all the gentlemen to line up on that wall, all the single ladies on this wall. It's going to be kind of like that story in the Bible where there weren't enough women for the men of Benjamin to marry, so they just had to like run and catch one. So guys, fastest guy gets first pick, down on one knee. No. It's not what I mean. Propose immediately. In a sense, we want to be exclusive with our spouse, and God is really the one. Maybe it doesn't matter all that much who you marry. Maybe you should just propose immediately when you find yourself Twitter-pated. Thank you, Bambi, for the reference there. Yeah, only the people my age and above know what I'm talking about. Well, that's not what I mean either. When I say propose immediately, I mean propose immediately to do things differently. To take a different approach. If you want to strengthen your marriage today, and you recognize that the common approach of our day when it comes to dating and romance may not be the wisest, then you have to decide now what your approach will be. You have to propose immediately to make a different plan for what your life, your dating life, the time leading up to your marriage is going to look like. Because if you wait to decide what your approach to dating is going to be until you're interested in someone, it's too little, too late. You have to propose immediately a plan, because love is blind. It's a true statement, almost. Actually, infatuation is blind, but it's a message for another day, the difference between love and infatuation. But rose-colored glasses are real. If you don't have a plan in mind ahead of time, and someone comes along who's interested in you and you feel the same way toward them, you're very likely going to just take the same approach that's common in our day. The Hollywood approach, the chick flick approach to romance. So propose immediately to take a different approach. What I mean is make a plan. Make a plan instead of just reacting with your heart. Wisdom, as well as jurisdiction, would dictate making this plan with your parents. I'll repeat that again. Wisdom, as well as jurisdiction, would dictate making this plan with your parents. Because you're under their roof, you're in their house. Of course, biblical principles should guide your plan. But what will your approach be? If you're not going to just follow the common approach of dating, if you're going to be exclusive with your future spouse, what is that going to look like? If you're going to keep God first and not make a God out of a romantic interest, how are you going to do it? If you're not going to just jump right into an exclusive relationship with someone until you're actually ready, or not jump from one exclusive relationship to another, then what will your approach be? I want to encourage you to talk about that as families. I'll again just share a detail of my experience, and I'll have to apologize to my parents later because they always tune in on the webcast. But our approach to dating in my family was, don't do it. It was pretty well known that it was frowned upon to be interested in date too young. But we didn't discuss what the plan should be. So some questions for us to consider and some biblical principles here. We'll talk about some questions of who, what, when, where, why, and how. What will your approach to dating look like? Who will you date? What will be appropriate during dating? How will you approach that dating? Why? Why will you date one person and not another? Who are the possibilities? But those are all things we'll have to talk about next month, because we're out of time. So rather than give one long message where I'm trying to cram it in, I'm going to give two shorter ones. So for now, just think about finding the one ASAP, being exclusive, and go ahead and think ahead about proposing immediately. What will your different approach to dating, with the guidance of God's word and the wisdom of your parents and what they agree to, what will your approach be? Spend some time thinking about that, because that is so much more important than figuring out the color scheme or the centerpieces on your wedding day.